Chapter 6. Late in the day, they crossed the Slie Moor, the main road that ran from Auchlea, the Hurdle Ford on the Liffey, to Clonmacnoise. Now they were nearing the border region that divided Leinster from the King of Tara's province of Meath. They had passed through an area of scattered bogs, some crossed by Tohar causeways, others forcing the road to skirt around them. Many dwellings seemed to be deserted, and the remaining inhabitants were unwelcoming and suspicious of strangers. Once the cart was halted by a trio of strange-looking figures, who rushed out into the road, waving short swords and calling on Phelim to stop. Their faces were painted in what seemed to be intended as wolf masks, but looked more like random daubs. Their hair was limed into spikes, and they were dressed in motley ragged clothes. Phelim spoke over his shoulder. "Get those swords out and look as menacing as you can," he said. "I'll soon get rid of these outlaw Dívirigig." Mirko and Donnacha did so. They were not skilled swordsmen, but they had handled such weapons before. While they waved their long swords threateningly, Phelim leant forward and spoke to the outlaws in a conversational tone, while lifting one of his throwing spears from the rack beside him. "Right, lads, which of you would like to be the first to get a spear through the belly?" The outlaws, who seemed to be quite young teenagers, whispered to each other, then rushed forward, yelling. Phelim stood and cast his spear with such force that it went right through the foot of the leading attacker. The other two fell over him, while their battle cries turned to screams of pain and fright. Phelim already had a second spear at the ready. "Now, boys," he said, "throw your swords well over to the side of the road and you'll suffer no more injury." They complied at once, and one of them spoke up. "We weren't really going to kill you," he said shakily. "We only wanted to take whatever food you had. We haven't eaten for 2 days. We thought hunting for our food would be a great adventure, but all the animals seem to be avoiding us." "You could have asked politely, my son," Mirko told him. "You wouldn't have been refused, you know. As it is, well, catch." And he threw him a large loaf of bread, followed by a lump of cheese. In the meantime, Donnacha had jumped to the ground, where he drew the spear from the injured boy's foot, ignoring his screams, washed the wound with water from his flask, sprinkled on some healing herbs, and used a strip of sacking as a bandage. "You should get him home as soon as you can," he told the other two. "Until then, you'll have to carry him or make a crutch." The would-be raiders made their slow way off the road, wolfing down the bread and cheese as they went. Mirko sighed. "Well done, Phelim," he told the driver. "Let's go on." It had begun to rain, a thick drizzle. The three travellers drew their cloaks over their heads. "We'd better not stop for the night until we're in Meath," said Mirko. "We'll be safer there." The ox cart caught up with a small family, father, mother and two young children, trudging northwards. Shivering in the rain, they readily accepted a lift and were pathetically grateful for bread, water and a few sacks and spare cloaks to protect them from the weather. They said they were a Meath family who had settled in Leinster, but had been robbed and driven from their home by a band of local Leinster partisans who called them enemy aliens. Now they were on their way to seek refuge with relatives who lived just across the border in Meath. "That was our last loaf of bread you gave them," muttered Phelim. Mirko heard him. "Don't be troubled, Phelim," he called. "The Lord will provide for us." "Well, Father, I hope he does it before we all starve to death, and the oxen are weakening. They must be rested soon." A few minutes later, the refugee man spoke up. "We're in Meath now," he said. "We've just passed the border stone. Our cousins will have room and food for you as well as for us, and fodder for the beasts." And so it proved. They were welcomed by the refugees' cousins, who fed them milk and porridge, showed them an outhouse to sleep in, and stabled the oxen. In the morning, the rain had stopped. As the travellers saw the sun rise on the fertile fields of Meath, their spirits lifted. They were in what they felt was a friendly province, the domain of Finchnach the Flach, of the southern Enail, King of Tara. It was a hospitable province, too, it seemed. Their hosts had given them a fine breakfast and a sack of supplies for their onward journey. Mirko's offer of payment had been firmly refused in gratitude for the help given to the refugees. The whole household, including field workers and slaves, had assembled and knelt to receive Mirko's parting blessing. Even Phelim was more cheerful as they continued northwards on a smoother road than in Leinster. Even the oxen seemed refreshed. Mirko had been deep in thought for some time before he spoke. "It's time we thought again about those notes by Cogitosis, Brother Donnacha. Let's go through them once more. Close your eyes. Into the Memory House, number one, black cupboard, top shelf, what's there? Budach Victorious Ulton, of course, Zonica. They went through all the notes, ending up with number three, brown cupboard, second shelf from the bottom, Death of Patrick. Now, said Mirko, what's your overall impression of these notes? Well, Father Mirko, I think they don't give us any facts that we don't know already. Another thing, they don't ask a single question that we could answer from having read the Confessio. He doesn't ask the name of Patrick's father or the name of Patrick's birthplace, probably because he knew the names already. I think he must have read the Confessio before making these notes. Excellent, Donica, I believe you're right. Anything else? Yes, the notes mentioning Ulton mean two different things, it seems to me. Some could mean, I must remember what Ulton told me about this. For instance, four names of Patrick Ulton. Others could mean, I must remember to ask Ulton about this. The note reading, Tradition of Miracles, Ulton may list and describe, would be one of those. You're probably right, Mirko replied, but it doesn't get us much further. So, cogitosis was ahead of us on some points, and on the trail of answers for others, but he intended to use Ulton as his main source. What's important for us now is to find out all we can from Ulton's writings and from people's memories of him. It seems he was old 30 years ago, so we can hardly expect to meet him now. Shortly after this, they encountered some local men who asked where they had come from and where they were going. When they heard, they told Mirko that the king of their Tuath would surely wish to greet the travellers. His house was almost on their route. Courtesy required that they agree, so Phelim turned the ox cart onto the side road that led to the royal house. And this is kept up even better than the main road, he said to himself. They were made welcome by the Rachtara house steward and by the Tuath King Donal himself, who invited them to join in the evening feast and stay the night, an offer they gratefully accepted. Mirko arranged with the Rachtara in return for two silver rings that a mounted messenger would be sent to Sleaty with a message to Abbot A. And what is the message to be? Asked the Rachtara. He is simply to say that we have extended our journey and will be returning like the three wise men, a week or more later than intended, and, let's see, that the buttermaker is irritated but unenlightened. The abbot will understand. I'm glad we came here, remarked Donica later on, admiring the fine joints of beef and white loaves laid out for the feast. True, there was no wine, but beakers of ale and mead were to be found all along the tables. A fine spread indeed, Mirko replied. Though we'd better go easy on those drinks, and I hope Phelim does likewise. He has to drive again tomorrow. Phelim had been escorted off to a less formal meal with the servants and slaves. After an hour or two of feasting, the royal poet stood, and King Donal called for silence. I am about to recite the poem announced, a poem I have just composed in honour of our noble and generous king, and I can tell you all that it took me 2 days lying in the dark to create these verses. He launched into his composition immediately, accompanied by a harpist in the background. Most wonderful and distinguished descendant of all the blood of Niall, greatest of Erin's warriors, his feats rival the great Cuchulain. Every honour known to man is due to this masterful conquering hero, the pride of all his race. Every enemy trembles before him, every friend is loaded down with gifts. The poet went on in this vein for at least 15 minutes, no doubt expecting, thought Donica sourly, to end up loaded with gifts himself. By now most of his audience were politely trying to stifle yawns. Looking up the table at the grumpy, low-sized Donal, Mirko was unable to associate him with the luminous hero of the poem. The applause when the poet eventually sat down seemed to contain as much relief as approval. Lucky Phelim, he didn't have to listen to that boring rubbish, whispered Donica. Mirko looked at him severely. The poem fully observed the conventions and rules governing such compositions, he said aloud. Listening and applauding are a way of showing our gratitude for King Donal's generous hospitality. A little later they found an opportunity to thank Donal in person. Their host asked them to pray for him to defeat all his enemies. We'll certainly pray for the best outcome all round, Mirko told him, bowing. Your hospitality to us here is most generous and most impressive. Then the Sleaty travellers were free to go to their curtained sleeping cubicles. Not even the sounds of continuing revelry could keep them awake any longer. As they were preparing to leave the following morning, They were told that emissaries of Finnshnachta, king of Tara, had arrived and were asking for them. "News spreads quickly here in Meath with our good roads," said the servant who brought the message. The emissaries proved to be two well-turned-out officers of Finnshnachta's household guards, who greeted Murchu with a smart fist-to-chest salute. They said they had been sent by their master to welcome the travellers and give them safe escort to wherever they wanted to go. "Handy enough, since we don't know the way," said Donacha to Phelim sotto voce. But the driver bodyguard was unimpressed by the shiny shields, jewelled sword hilts and new sandals. "These lads seem to think they're Roman legionaries from a few centuries back," he muttered. Donacha hissed at him to keep quiet. "Finnshnachta was very pleased to hear of your monastery's decision to affiliate with Armagh and is anxious to help you in any way he can," the escort leader told Murchu. "I am to give you these." And he handed over a large bag containing bacon, a cheese, some loaves and a flask of ale. "Most kind of him and our grateful thanks," Murchu replied. "We're glad to have you with us because we don't know the way to our destination, Ardbrechan Monastery, except that it's north from here." "Ardbrechan, that's quite a distance away up in North Meath. We know the way, of course, and we'll guide you." It took them the rest of the day and most of the following morning to reach and cross the Slia Ossil, the Ossil Road, which ran east-west from Inverculpa at the mouth of the Boyne to Croaghan in Connacht, and formed the boundary between North and South Meath. The escort officers were riding slowly ahead of the plodding ox cart. After a further half hour, they saw the monastery some distance off to the west, and their escort pointed out the side road leading to it. With a flurry of smart salutes, the two officers left to return to Tara, unable to conceal their delight at being able to gallop again. "Wasn't it considerate of King Finnshnachta to send us an escort?" said Donacha, as the ox cart moved on. Murchu shrugged. "It would be nice to think so," he said, "but I had a chat with one of the officers last night, and he told me it was really the idea of the king's chief Brehev lawyer. It seems Finnshnachta himself is too busy planning his next campaign against the Igunlinge to be concerned about travellers, but the Brehev and the officers know that the Tara policy is to encourage Armagh supporters. That's us."